chant the prayer verse together, and then you can just repeat after me for the other verses.
Om Abhyayam Tumamangani Vak Pranas Chakshushrotramato Balamindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranamastvanirakaranam me astu tadatmanigyate ya upanishatsu dharmaste mai santu he mai santu om shanti shanti shanti
om kene shitam patati preshitam manaha
Om kene shitam patati preshitam manaha
Kena prana pratama praiti yuktaha
Kena prana pratama praiti yuktaha
Kene shitam vacham imam vadanti
Kene shitam vacham imam vadanti
Chakshishrotram ka udevo yunakti
Chakshushrotram kaudevo yunakti
Shrotrasya shrotram manaso manoyata
Shrotrasya shrotram manaso manoyata
Vacho havacham sa upranasya pranaha
Vacho havacham sa upranasya pranaha
Chakshushas chakshurati mucha dhiraha
Chakshushas chakshurati mucha dhiraha
Pretyasma lokar amrita bhavanti
Pretyasma lokar amrita bhavanti
Natatra chakshur gacchati
Natatra chakshur gacchati
Navak gacchati no manaha
Navagacchati no manaha
Navidmo navijani maha
Navidmo navijani maha
Yataitad anushishyat
Yataitad anushishyat
Anyadeva tad viritat ato
Anyadeva tad viritat ato
Aviritat adhi
Aviritat adhi
Iti shushruma purvesham
Iti shushruma purvesham
Yenastad vyachachakshire
Yenastad vyachachakshire
In verse 2, really the Rishi is kind of talking only about the Pratyagatma, this innermost self that really needs to and will be revealed as Brahman. For now, it's the freedom of that innermost self, freedom, and in terms of being the ear of the ear and the eye of the eye. That being, if you remember, the sadharana is the one who's the ear of the ear. All of the nominatives are the sadharana. Means there's only one. The ear of the ear is the eye of the eye, is the mind of the mind, is the prana of the prana. That's the one that enlivens all of the entire upadhi, actually. The entire upadhi, what lends consciousness, even to the sukshma sharira. We just take for granted the sukshma sharira, the sattva, because it reflects the sattva, the mind and the sense organs, that it is the conscious being that enlivens this basically inert physical body that's gone through this process of panchikarana. It's all tapata, tamas. So we think of the sukshma sharira as being me, the conscious entity. But actually the sukshma sharira itself is illumined. Every single part of it. All of your thoughts, all of your perceptions, everything that's given to you because of the sukshma sharira, because of the reflection of consciousness in the sattva. But it's still Maya, right? It's still Maya. if it's Maya, it has no sut or chit of its own. What makes something Maya is that it has no being apart from the Adhishtana. And so conscious being is the Adhishtana of the eyes, it's the Adhishtana of the ears, it's the Adhishtana of your voice, it's the Adhishtana of your karmendriyas, your organs of action. It's the Adhishtana of the entire creation. So do you remember what this word Adhishtana means? This is a good word, so I'm going to just keep translating it, just so that it becomes second nature. If we say, and have established in many different ways, and we'll continue throughout this text, that this creation, which includes your body, mind, sense organs, you're not apart from it in any way, right? Just like in the dream character is not apart from the dream. It's actually part and parcel of the whole fabric of the dream. And like that, your body, mind, sense organs really belongs to the whole. It's one upadi, one jiva, among many jivas that exist within Ishwara, within the fabric of Ishwara. So you have to think of it like this. When your dream comes into manifestation, it's not like space comes first and then in terms of space comes first and then these other things come, and then we have the world comes, and then the jivas enter. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, where are they entering from? There's no jivas that are entering. There's no other place. So the whole Maya Upadi, as we really start to analyze it, and there's many different ways of analyzing it in reference to time, in reference to space, in reference to objectivity, in reference to the fact that they come into being and go out of being, all of these things establish that this world that we perceive has no independent reality. If it has no independent reality, we'd say like this, if it has no independent existence, if it has independent existence, then it just simply exists. That's it. It is existence itself. But we don't have that experience of anything in the creation at all. There is no such experience of something having independent existence. It means it is, period. It is existence, and existence comes in this form. If so, existence is in the form of a mountain. Okay? No, existence isn't in the form of a mountain. You know, mountains themselves come into being and go out of being. Space and the whole creation comes into being and out of being. Just closing your eyes is enough to lose the experience. If you can lose the experience of something, then that experience is not does not define the person who still remains. I know this is kind of tricky to understand, but it's actually very profound to understand it. Do you think, say, let me just put it this way, because once we start getting this, it's really a beautiful thing. Say if we're talking about the Atma, conscious being, that we say consciousness is itself existence, my amness, I am a conscious being. And this conscious being is limitless. And so the self-experience that I am is the self-experience that I am. That's what has to be revealed. By removing from my self-experience anything that it can be without. Why? Because if it can be without it, then that's not intrinsic to it. So would that mean that if I shut my eyes, I still am, right? Nothing happens to me. I shut my eyes, and when I shut my eyes, the experience of this world is not present. My experience of this world is not present. Now you'll say, well, yeah, but it's still here. It's still here because just because I'm shutting my eyes, it doesn't make it go away. True. It's objective. One of us shuts our eyes, we all shut our eyes, we open our eyes, and here it is, exactly like it was before. That is not the point. The point is, if I shut my eyes, this goes away. But how can it go away if it's intrinsic to me, to consciousness? How can the experience of this room be negated from me? just simply by shutting my eyes. The problem that we have with this understanding, I think, if you do have a problem with it, is that we know that by shutting my eyes, the object doesn't go away. We know that. But so we have this idea of this physical world that stands its ground, whether I turn my back or not. That's what the difference between something being what we call vyavahara, or empirical reality, Ishwara's creation, and my subjective creation. If it's my subjective creation, then it's here when it's here, and if I withdraw it, it's not here. But you don't have that capacity in reference to to Ishwara. That's Ishwara's capacity. It comes from the Ishwara, that comes from the Maya, expression of Maya, the sustenance of Maya, and then the resolution of Maya. Right? That's not you doing that in terms of your upadhi. Your upadhi belongs to that expression. And so you're not able to, by shutting your eyes, get rid of the creation. Whereas we would almost use metaphorically, if Bhagawan, when Bhagawan shuts his eyes, the whole creation is gone. He has no experience of the creation, it's not here. Just like kind of if you withdraw the imagination, if you withdraw your imagination of the world or whatever you happen to be imagining, you withdraw it. And then when you withdraw it, since it's your projection, then it's not here. But so that's how we get confused, because we know that this world is not the projection of the individual jiva. And so opening or closing my eyes doesn't really mean anything, because we know it's still here. But that isn't the point. The point is, if you can do anything that you do, can remove the experience, if anything that you do can remove the experience that you're having, it doesn't belong to the self. Right? Because you're not removing yourself. If you can remove an experience from the self, you're not removing yourself, but the experience is not there. That's why, like, just to give you, I don't this might be overdoing it for you, but it's really a big deal. Okay. So we'll just sit with it for a while. That's why when we shut our eyes, it's kind of a relief in that, you know, because you're kind of shutting things down. It does a lot just to shut your eyes. But if you shut your eyes and then open your eyes, nothing either way happens to you. Just try to shut your eyes for like 5 seconds and then open them. And open and shut, focusing on your own being. Open and shut. Open and shut. The presence or absence of the experience is just that. It's the presence or absence of the experience. But it's not at all the presence or absence of yourself. Another example of this is when we, like say we're looking at the Ashtanga Yoga, or we're just doing a practice of meditation, right? In that practice of meditation, we are withdrawing experiences, really. Like, say, if you've learned how to really relax your body, you have your eyes closed, and you're relaxing your body, what are you doing? You are withdrawing the experience of the body. It's no longer calling attention to you, right? And so now there's just yourself with only the most minimal experience of the body. It's probably there to some degree initially, but not much, because it's so relaxed, you know, and your attention is elsewhere, and so the body is certainly not calling attention to itself. This is meditation, what we do. Okay, then also you can change your focus to your breath. Now you're really withdrawing a little bit more deeply. The body kind of as though disappears as the focus goes more on the breath. And then you learn how to let the breath go on just by itself. It's just going up and down by itself. You're not messing with it at all. It is just breathing on its own. So you sit, you let that breath come in and out and in and out. You know? And so now there's I am there. And there's this gentle breath taking place. That's my experience as I'm focused on it. Okay, still me. I'm exactly the same. But now there's more withdrawal from the body. And now the focus is the breath. Okay? So it's me and the breath. And then I withdraw my focus a little bit more to the mind. And as I am relaxing and allowing the mind, just be present to the mind, I'm now not really interested in the breath or in the body. My focus, the me, is now focusing just on the fluctuating thoughts, fluctuating emotions, images, whatnot, that are just that, fluctuating. That this one comes and this one comes. They're also multidimensional in a sense that some of the types of thinking are concerned. Am I doing this right? Is this the correct thing? Other things are, I don't want to do this anymore. Another one may be, this thought is coming in from the outside and this thing is happening and this emotion is arriving. But what it is, if you just sit and relax and be with it, you are there. And these, what I call at this point, rather ephemeral thoughts. This is passing through, this is passing through, this is passing through, this is passing through. Now, that's my experience now. It's me with these ephemeral thoughts, okay? Ephemeral means they're just coming and going, you know? They don't. And another good understanding of ephemeral, they are coming and going, and then you realize as you're just relaxing and letting, accepting them, welcoming them, letting them be so that they don't bind you. You're just letting them be like scenery. You notice that, nothing happens to me. These thoughts are coming and going, coming and going. I'm not coming and going or being touched in any way. Nothing is happening to me. And so now even these thoughts that are being experienced, of course, I'm not really experiencing the body, but I don't care about that. I don't need to nothing has happened to me when I'm not experiencing the body. Nothing happens to me when I'm not experiencing the room. Nothing happens to me when I'm not experiencing the breath. And nothing happens to me when these thoughts that are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, and as I relax and allow them to be, and like the Buddha telling his disciples to just let the water settle. I'm staying there for some time, and then before I know it, you know, maybe I have 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, there are no thoughts. Your mind is just very quiet, very placid, very quiet. And so now here I am just being with myself. All of these experiences come and go, whether it's an external experience, whether it's experience of the body, whether it's experience of the breath. It depends on what my mind is focusing on. What if it's not focusing on anything? What if the mind, in fact, is only focusing on my own being? Right? Then all of these things are not in my purview because I'm focusing on something else. And even if they are in my realm, in my range of experience, they're not touching me in any way. It's not like I have a thought and it like enters into my swarupa, and it enters into my nature in some way. Actually, absolutely nothing happens. It's not being touched at all. And so now, when we're talking about, now in this realm that we're talking about, it really has only to do with experience, what I'm experiencing. So what I'm saying here is that the presence or absence of my experiences don't touch myself at all. I don't need experiences at all. They're totally irrelevant to my being. If you say, oh, I really need to have these experiences, who needs to have them? Your mind needs to have them because of some raga dvesha. I need this experience because this experience is necessary for my happiness or for my fullness. So this is the samsara. This is your mind babbling away, you know. But there's no reality in it from the standpoint of myself. If I, as I do this type of viveka, what do I realize is that from my own standpoint, just me, those experiences may come and go, but from my own standpoint, as me, those experiences aren't even known. They're not even known. from the standpoint of me, the conscious being. For me, the conscious being, I am not a knower. To be a knower, to call myself a knower, I have to have a mind that has a vritti in it, right? And then that vritti is known. And so then I call myself a knower. But I am not a knower. Not me, not the conscious being. The mind, the vritti, that is reflecting as though that consciousness, and because of ignorance, because the ignorant self-ignorance is there, that vritti, which has content, whatever that may be, it could be content is the room, right? So now we have a vritti, a thought modification of this room, which is known. That's the actual experience. This room is known. Okay. But because I'm ignorant, I don't know that there's any self beyond my mind. That's as far as I can go. I am my mind. Okay. And so that means that this mind has, for me, for an ignorant person, different functions. One function of the mind is to be a knower of the object of the vritti. So say, for instance, to the sense organs, I have this vritti here, this thought modification of the room. But that would be nothing if it's not known. But it is known, and I'm the mind. So I am the knower of the known. That's what the mind does. It divides the experience up into me, the conscious being, who is now in relationship to the object of consciousness. So I'm now, through my sense organs, I'm experiencing this room with all of you in it. I have a vritti, right? And that vritti, you, all this whole room is the content of this vritti through my sense organ. So I have a vritti, a thought modification, and all of you are in it. Right? Now, it is known, right? Any vritti you have, it is known. Yes, it is. You can't have a vritti that's not known. But who are you? What do you label yourself in reference to what is known in the vritti, what is objectified in the vritti? We have to have a language for it, because I'm not this room. So I have to have a relationship. You know, in Ajnanam, in this world of duality, I have to be able to account for myself in relationship to what I'm perceiving. So what I say is, I am the knower of this room. Because that's my experience. I am the knower of this room. And I know the room, you know. So I'm the knower, and then there's the knowledge taking place, the knowing that's taking place, and then there's the object of knowledge. So I have this, these three. I am the knower, right, who is knowing this room. And this triputi of knower, knowing, known takes place in this vritti. It takes place through the ahankara. And actually, it's not my experience at all. You don't have an experience of knower, knowing, known. But you can pretend that you do. In this way, you can say, well, I'm able to know this. I'm able to have this vritti through my sense of, through my five, because of my five sense organs. Through my five sense organs, I am able to know this room. This is our samsara language. Through my five sense organs, I am able to know this room. You say, yes, that's right. And then we would add a little Vedanta. Through my five sense organs, I am able to know this room because they create a vritti, a thought modification in my mind. And so when they create that modification in the mind, I know. I know the room because of that thought modification, and I am the knower of that thought modification. That's the ahankara. I am the knower of it. But what is actually happening? If you... We have to reevaluate the actual experience. So I would say the actual experience like this. You are in the room. Your sense organs are working. The mind is using the five sense organs to perceive this room, which creates a vritti in the mind. A vritti with this contact, with this content, is created in the mind. Because my sense organs, being instruments, are doing their job. Because my mind is utilizing, they simply do their job. And they are able to create this vritti. Now that the vritti is here, as the vritti is here, what happens? What happens is that if the vritti is here, the vritti is known. Right? So here comes the vritti is known. So it's like my mind, we say, this is what we call vritti vyapti. My mind creates, my mind goes out through the sense organs to create a thought modification in the mind, which, because the mind is sattva, is known automatically. Because of awareness, the vritti takes place in awareness, and this awareness then illumines the vritti, and so the vritti is known. That's your experience. You say there is a knower, which you can't find. As we've analyzed it a couple of times, there really is no knower. There is consciousness. There is me. But I'm not a knower. I am simply me. To be a knower, I need the mind and the sense organs to even use that language. Without the mind and the sense organs, where are we going to place this knower? The knower that we can never experience. We never experience a knower. We experience everything as being known. Literally everything. Every experience, and meaning this, every single experience that you have, it is, and it is known. This is the sadhadana. This is what is common. This is the invariable. There are no exceptions to it at all. Every perception that I have, every single perception, right, is made up of what we call asadhadana. Means all of the variables, many different variables. Every vritti is a variable. They have this one, then this one, then this one, then this one. An infinite number of vrittis. They all come and go. They're all the variables. What never comes and goes? Me. I never come and go. And who am I? I'm a conscious being. Okay. What does that mean? But it's true. Every one of us know that we're a conscious being. But when you start analyzing your experience like this, what you start to realize is the conscious being is ever-present, in fact, pervasive to every experience that you have. It's the invariable. So who is really the invariable? Me. I am the invariable. I am the conscious being who is never not present. But now, with meditation, you know, or if there's meditation that takes place in the class also, but in any case, with meditation, what happens is I recognize really the nature of me, of just myself, recognizing that the me, the self, I have nothing to do with the sense organs or with the mind. I have nothing to do with the world, in fact. As consciousness, I'm just consciousness. What if I, this is also imagine this, here we are in the world, but what if I am not, my being does not have any maya, means there's no, my just me as I am, but without the mind and sense organs. I have no mind, no sense organs, just consciousness. The me that illumines the mind and the sense organs in the world. The me that has a subject-object relationship in the Driksha Viveka with the mind and the sense organs in the world. Say we don't have a mind or sense organs or a world, you know. Then what am I? We'll just do mind, mind and sense organs. No mind and sense organs. Then what do I know? What do I know? I know myself, not as an object, but just as conscious being. I am conscious being. I don't require the mind and sense organs to be there. Why do I require them? They just give me experiences that come and go. They have nothing to do with me, other than they belong to Maya, and Maya has for me as its adhishtana. In that way, they have something to do with me, but not really. Not really, because they're mitya. And so once I say all of these things, including your mind and your sense organs, you know, have no reality, no being at all, other than me. I am the being, actually. I am the being. I am the knownness which the whole creation enjoys. Creation has no being, no knownness of its own. In fact, if I were to take myself away, which I can't do, because there is nothing but me and there's no one to take it away, But say if I were able to just remove myself, it would be similar to removing the rope from the snake. You remove everything that actually is. I am the invariable, the existence. It is, it is, it is. See, this is for real. Look, if I say it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. Isness, being, is the invariable. My thought is, my thought is, my emotion is, my emotion is, my breath is, my daydreams are. You name anything, anything, it is. The isness doesn't belong to it, or to it, or to it, or to it. The isness is the adhishtana. It's invariable. I can say, you are, the space is, the water, the the floor is, the ceiling is, all of this is. And if anybody walks out of the room, this empty space is. There's no escape. You cannot escape isness, being. You cannot escape being. You can say, well, let's just imagine some non-existence then. That's, we'll escape it that way. Imagine non-existence. There's nothing here, there's nothing here, there's nothing here. It's one of Ramana's good good meditations. There's nothing here. You work on that one. And what do you... That's the best way to have samadhi. Just make everything non-exist. Nothing exists. If it comes in your mind, no. Nothing. Nothing exists. Okay. Then what are you left with? Non-existence? No. You're not left with non-existence. You're left with existence. It's just you've gotten rid of everything you can possibly get rid of. But what's left is me. Existence. I am left. All the things that you can get rid of, you will get rid of. If I am looking this way, this is my reality right now. But if I look this way, I'm getting rid of that. And if I look this way, it's completely gone. It's completely gone. It's not in my experience at all. And so now what if I try to get rid of all experience? Just blot it out. What is left? The one who really lights up that experience, which is me. So because of all of this, the existence, which is consciousness, which is me, I don't say, oh, I am an existent being. That's not enough. You have to say, I am a conscious being. I'm a conscious existence being. I can't get rid of existence. I can't get rid of consciousness. Consciousness is existence because it's the non-objectifiable invariable. If something's non-objectifiable, it doesn't exist within time and space because you illumine time and space itself. Right? You're the luminary of that. You know. Then how can there be existence and consciousness? Because you illumine space. So there's nothing, there's no duality here. So we say conscious existence because consciousness is existence. My amness is consciousness and my consciousness is my amness. They're exactly the same thing. Existence is consciousness. Or consciousness exists, however you want to say it. They're one and the same thing. And you can't get rid of or touch either one in any way. And who is this consciousness, this conscious existent being? Who is it? It's me. Me. This is the right word to use. Me. Conscious existence seems abstract. And we'll have all abstractions about what conscious existence means. It's not an abstraction. These are just synonyms that are used to point to my nature. So then one thing you can do, am I really conscious being? Is that really true? Why do they say that? Why does the Shastra say that? So now Nididhyasana can become really, meditation can become really useful. You kind of withdraw your sense organs and then just let your mind turn toward your own being. And then the buddhi, the mind, can ask, okay, I'm aware of you, I see, but you're the one that illumines me, I see that, okay. Are you conscious? Is your nature consciousness? Do you exist? Do I exist? Does this me exist? Is me a conscious being? What are you going to say? Of course you're a conscious being. How can you say, no, I'm not a conscious being? It's not going to happen. Another conscious being. Okay. Now, another thing you do, just gently you can look toward your own being, let your buddhi as though be a mirror to you. You say, can I change myself? Can I put a bag over myself, kind of blot myself out? It's a serious meditation. Can I blot myself out? Can I think about something that will cover me? Anything. Think about something that will blot me out. Try. Think about something that will cover me. No. There's no such thing. There's no such thing. But in terms of the world, you can cover everything in the world. You can blot out anything in the world. You can change your perceptions, you know. You can shut down your emotional self. You can get rid of everything in the world. You can blot it out. There's only one thing you can't blot out, and that's yourself. And the more you try to blot it out, the more samadhi you have, because you're the only, you're trying so hard to blot yourself out that your mind is just totally, you know, focused on you. And so that just highlights you even more. Try to put a paper bag over yourself or something. Nothing happens at all. Nothing happens at all. But you know what this also means? That this is why these are kind of good experiments. Nothing happens at all, ever. Which means that no matter what experience you're having, it could be really a sad experience, or an agitated, or an experience we really don't even want to have at all. You know, you can be having the whole spectrum of experience, you can have them all. But then, just remember this next time you have some experience that you'd rather not be having. Just ask, you know, just focus on your own presence. Am I still here? Am I here? Is this experience covering me? We don't think about that because we get so involved in the experience, especially if it's super super happy or super negative, you know. We get involved in it, you know. And so the mind, the buddhi, gets overwhelmed by the negative experience, by the sadness or the hurt or the anger. It gets overwhelmed. And so then it's just speaking, and speaking from that anger. It's totally, you know, absorbed in anger samadhi. And then it's just speaking out of all of that. But if you have kind of an auto-suggestion you can make and say, the next time I get really hurt or angry or anything, let me just use that opportunity. Here I am. Okay. Let's use the opportunity to see if I'm still here. Or is the anger putting a bag over me? That's a very important meditation because, in fact, yeah, you're still here exactly as you were, exactly as you are when you have a happy vritti. That's very important. If that's not understood, then what does that mean? I'm just waiting for happy vritti so I can experience myself. That's not the self. That's a happy vritti. That's a sukha vritti. And a dukkha vritti, they're just vrittis. They come and go. Your happy vritti comes and goes. Your meditative vritti comes and goes. That's all samsara. Bhagavan gave us all these vrittis, every kind imaginable, a whole emotional spectrum. They all come and go. That's not you. You are the one, the adhishtana of those vrittis. Happy vrittis, sad vrittis, angry vrittis, it doesn't make any difference at all. You are still there. Once the mind, that's a big, wonderful thing for the mind to recognize that fact. Because when you know that, then whatever the vritti is, if it's kind of uncomfortable for you, you know, you can just let your buddhi, you know, take refuge in yourself. Just relax. Here you have this awful vritti. Let the buddhi relax, turn toward yourself and welcome that vritti. That's what all you have to do. Because in the welcoming of the vritti, it also starts, the buddhi state remains relaxed, it's sitting with you, you know. And then you welcome that vritti, don't try to push the horrible thing away. Yeah. Just let it be. Welcome it. It will just in that welcoming, in that relaxation, it will dissipate. But whether it dissipates or not, the thing to notice is that you're still there. And so you are a constant refuge no matter what you're feeling or what you're thinking or how confused you are. It doesn't make any difference. You're still there in exactly the same way. Nothing has happened. So the tricky thing is, and within the, what is happening here, you know, in this verse, we now can look at 10 minutes or so. But I'm talking about the verse, don't worry. I'm talking about it. Because I want you to really see this. You get used to the fact, just a simple, it's a fact. It's a fact because it's an experience you can't deny and you can't make it be different. That's what it means, it's a fact. You can't make it different than this. This me, this very personal me, you are always at all times intact and available for your happy or hurt mind. You are its adhishtana. Its adhishtana means that all of these experiences that we have, they have no being apart from me. They have no knownness apart from me. But as the adhishtana of this mitya, I have no dependence on them at all. And in fact, from my standpoint of just me, I'm not doing anything, I'm not knowing anything, I'm not thinking anything. I am just self-evident, self-shining me, because I am the conscious, existent being. This me is the consciousness, is the existence that this whole creation enjoys, but which is not involved. I don't have sense organs or a mind, I don't have hands and legs. Space itself is objectified. I'm not doing anything at all, and yet I am everything I've ever wanted to be, because Ananda, I am what I'm looking for in the world. I am that wholeness or that fullness. And so the jnani, once this becomes recognized, you know, then in your fullness, you're living your life. The self as you are is not subject to birth or death or change or pollution of any kind. It's not subject to becoming better or becoming worse. I just simply am. And I'm the being that the whole creation enjoys. From my standpoint, there's no limitation whatsoever because there's no second thing. That's the satyamitya understanding. So I just have to get used to myself. I have to get used to myself. Recognizing me, that I'm always here. You're never covered in any way. You are always here. You do not need a sukhavritti. You might like to have sukhavrittis. I mean, they're fun and all of that. They're good, you know. But they're not as good as you are. Sukhavritti, sukha means just happy, different happy thoughts. They don't add to the wholeness of yourself. If you had to, and you can even add, even as a samsari, if I were to ask you, just to realize how completely beloved you are, what do you want? Do you want yourself or do you want the sukhavritti? What do you want? Do you want yourself or do you want the sukhavritti? Of course I want myself. I want myself. If I have to give up the sukhavritti, I'll give up the sukhavritti. Because I want to be. I want to live. If I don't have the sukhavritti, let it go then. Let it go. Do you want this desired object or do you want yourself? I want both. No, you only have one. Okay, then get rid of the object. If I have to get rid of one thing, I'll get rid of the object. Who wouldn't say that? You know? So another beautiful meditation that we have to keep working on is, why do they say I'm Ananda when right now I'm not having a sukhavritti? Why are you the beloved? Why are you Ananda? Why are you the Padma Ananda? Padma Ananda means there's no greater Ananda than yourself. I'm not having Ananda right now. I'm not in a bliss state right now. Am I? Are you in a bliss state? I'm not in a bliss state. What we know, this continuum and happier, happier, happiest, blissful, way out there. Okay, I'm not that. I'm not having any bliss like that. Then why do they say I am Ananda? Because I am changeless. the self is changeless. It's not going to become any more ananda than it is right now. There's not an increase in ananda for myself. There's not an increase in consciousness. There's not an increase in existence. So what do they mean by I am ananda? What is ananda about? This is one of those important aha moments. Because when you recognize why, or we recognize why, the Shastra says, you are the Satchit Ananda, Ananda. That really means the most beloved. There's nothing more dear to me. That is a really wonderful meditation where your mind will go, your buddhi will go, why do they say I'm Ananda? What's so Ananda about me? Then you can say, well, what would you think about getting rid of yourself? You can say all kinds of things just to try to hone in on how beautiful or how absolutely desirable your own nature is. You can't imagine being without you, actually. but to recognize that is to start loving your knowledge and feeling the tremendous freedom of your knowledge just because of the fact of that. So here, just to start this verse, I've got 10 minutes, this verse 3, it says, the teacher is saying, Natetra chakshuhu gachati. It says, there means what? To that ear of the ear, the eye of the eye. That which is the sadhanana, that which is in the invariable in all of my experiences, in all of my sense organs, in everything that I do, that invariable, who is the being of that, the very being, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the prana of the prana, that which gives us its being, gives its essence. So he says, there, in that eye of the eye, mind of the mind, etc., there, the eyes can't go. I can't see that one who is innermost. The eyes don't go there. So it says, not there, chakshuhu gachati. The eyes don't go there. Chakshuhu is eyes. Na gachati, they don't go there. Navak gachati, your speech doesn't go there either. Your words don't go there. In fact, we have no word in our vocabulary within duality that will go, that will land on something, on the non-dual, on something which itself is not objectifiable. Because we don't know about it. It's not, the self, Atma consciousness is not an object that I can, my eyes can look at, you know, or my speech can say, well, see the existence, do you see how that is, you know, existence, this, you know, consciousness. What is your mind going to do? No, it can't do anything. It just gets totally confused. Existence. What existence or consciousness is that you're talking about? Yeah. What? Because... all we know until we start using lakshanas, implied, the input by implication, every word that we have is what we call a vacharta. The word lands on its object. There is no object here. There is no object. Consciousness is not an object. There is no existence to look at. There's no consciousness to look at. If I looking inside or consciousness, I can't, you know, consciousness. If I'm looking, you know, or I have to have a word, consciousness has to land on something. So we have this word in our vocabulary, but it means something else. Yeah, I'm really conscious of that. I have a lot of consciousness around that. We all enjoy a lot of consciousness. We're human beings. We have consciousness. You know, we're conscious beings. Yeah, we're conscious beings. So we have the word, but the word only exists within duality. You know, We exist, I exist, look, I'm here, I exist. Within duality, this is here, so it exists. This is here, so it exists. There's no existence. But this, because it is here, we say it exists. But there's no, if I say, well, does it have existence? Yeah, it has existence because it's here. It has existence, it's here. Can't you see it? So existence and the object are one and the same thing. If I can experience it, it exists. So this exists, this exists, this exists. But what if I say, yeah, but what about existence? Does existence exist? What? Does existence exist, I said. Does existence exist? What? That's what Swamiji will do. What? Does existence exist? What, are you crazy? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? So we don't have any words for these things. There's no words for the self. And so we have to use words, however. And so to use the words, we have to handle the words in a way that we call these lakshanas, where we're using these words by implication to point to something that is there, me, to point to me. But I, this conscious being, is not an object in the world, but I am here. That's the difference. I'm not here as an object, but I am here. And because I exist, because I am a conscious being, my being can be pointed to for the mind to recognize. My being is self-evident, conscious. It is consciousness, which is self-evident. It is existence. It's consciousness which exists. Now, I don't have a clue what that means. Unless I'm using it as a, and with a teaching methodology, to point that out, to point yourself out to you, and to differentiate consciousness existence from all of these things that have been superimposed on it. I would say like this, this is lamp existence, you know, this is shawl existence. Existence is the noun, and everything comes and goes in that noun. It comes into existence, goes out of existence. It comes into the noun, goes out of the noun. Existence is what is. And then when something's there, it has existence. When it's gone, it doesn't. But nothing happens to existence. Nothing at all. If you take a pot, Swamiji uses this example. Say you take the good old clay pot and you drop it. And it just goes to, it just blasts open to smithereens as it hits the ground. So now what you had the beautiful pot existence, and now you have the shards existence, the pot shards. Now they exist. The pot is gone, but the shards exist. Right? Nothing has happened to existence, because existence is the noun. Existence is the adhishtana. These things all come into existence and go out of existence, but whatever is there exists. Right? You can't, if it's here, it exists. But you have to look at the existence as the noun, as the adhishtana, which these nama-rupas have as their being. So that existence has to be taught in an unusual way, because you are self-evident, but you're not an object to your sense perception or to any of the means of knowledge that we have to know what we know in the world. None of those work in reference to differentiating and recognizing myself. And so here he says, there, in this ear of the ear, mind of the mind, the sense or the eyes don't go there. Speech doesn't go there, because speech can only go out here, landing on unknown objects that they're in relationship to. The mind can't go there. How can the mind go there? Say it's, okay, turn around and look at myself. But then I'm the one that's illumining the mind. How can it turn around and look at me when I'm the one that illumines it? I'm the one because of which the vritti is known. And so now this mind, okay, let me look around. And so what does it do? Poor thing. First it thought, okay, I'm going to just look everywhere out here. No, okay, it's not out here. So let me look inside. So now I'm looking around inside, right? And I'm forming inner vrittis. Let me do a little inner travel. And now I am illumining, consciousness is illumining that vritti that is having some inner travel. It doesn't make any difference. Whatever way it looks, right, it's forming a vritti, okay, but the consciousness that illumines the vritti just remains exactly the same. But the mind still is looking. We have to stop the mind from looking. We have to make the mind recognize its own being. We have to make the pot recognize its clayness. Imagine the pot looking all over the place for the clay. I'm looking for the clay. I'm looking for the clay. There's clay. I know I'm clay. I'm looking for the clay. It is the clay. How can it look for the clay? It is the clay. So somehow this teaching methodology has to remove all of the things, everything else, that does all of this looking and leaves only me, the one who is there, ever present in every situation, in every vritti. So then it says also, after saying this, nothing goes there. What can we do? So now that the acharyas, the teachers, they see, because they're using the plural, standing for the whole sampradaya, they say, Navidmaha. We don't know. Navidmaha. We don't know it. We don't know, says. We don't know the ear of the ear, or the eye of the eye, or the speech of the speech. We don't know that, because it's not an object of our knowledge to be known. We can't know the eye of the eye and the ear of the ear, etc., as some object. My sense organs can't go there. None of ours can. We can't go there. We don't know it as an object. We don't know it. So then he says, Navidmaha, we don't know it. Then he says, Na vijani maha yata etad anishishat. And not only that, we don't know it, and we also don't know how to teach it to you. It says, vijani maha. We don't know yata how means how to teach etad this, anishishat. How are we supposed to teach this to you? You know? So then he says, we don't know how to do that. Then he goes, he tells why we don't know how to do that. Anyat eva tad viditat. This is different. This ear of the ear, eye of the eye, it is different from the things that are known, things that can be objectified. And it's also different from the things that are unknown. Okay. We're going to do this next week, but in the morning, but I want to finish this translation. It's also different from the unknown. Thus, they say, the teacher says, shushruma, iti, therefore, this being the case, we teach this, purve sham, ye nahatad vyachichakshare. We teach this, or we have heard this, we have learned this from our teachers, from those who have gone before, those who have taught us this, vyachachakshire, those who have revealed this to us, those ones who have revealed that this to us, we have learned that which we have learned from them, that is what we teach you. How we have learned this from them, that is how we teach you. We ourselves would not know, because the Atma, the self, is not an object. It's not an object for me to know through speech or through my mind or my sense organ. I am self-evident because I'm self-evident me. Therefore, I can be known. But nobody can use the means of knowledge that we're used to using to know anything, because all the means of knowledge are directed outward. And I have to know to have knowledge of this one, this me, that is self-evident but not objectifiable. And so, how should we know how to teach that? So the rishi say, we don't know. We don't know how to know that. And we don't know how to teach that to you either. We teach it the way that we have been taught. And that vyachakshire means we teach it the way we have been taught. These vyachakshire means the way it's been expounded to me over and over and over again until it's clear. That's what vyachakshire. Well, our teachers have taught us until we understand. Vyachakshire, over and over and over again, until we understand. And that's what we're, how we're teaching you. Very nice. He'll go in a little bit more about this.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.